Hello,
you know, it's slightly warmer in Panama City, if that's not hot enough for you.
So we are recording now.
Got it.
And I think it's also more expensive to get to Panama City.
Probably is, yes.
We're going to have to rent a car because none of our cars are big enough for me, my sister, my wife, and our two dogs.
Yeah.
And I don't think the rental agreement will be pleased if we drove all the way to Panama City.
No, that would be a haul.
Yeah, it probably would violate some kind of terms.
Even Panama City, Florida would be
probably
a challenge.
Still violate, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a Panama City, California?
Who knows? I would not be surprised. It's a big state. I'm sure there's a Springfield, maybe Panama City.
Yeah, there's a Greenville in almost every state, too.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think there's only like two or three states that don't have one. That's not confusing that we allow multiple versions of city names up to 50 times.
There are multiple San Franciscos out there. And for a long time, MapQuest always assumed when I would type in San Francisco from San Francisco, California, that it was referring to like Arizona or something. Yeah. But that was back in the days of MapQuest. You know, those days are long past.
Ah, good old MapQuest.
There's also
good
one.
Old MapQuest.
Is it Chile?
Yeah, I think there's one down in Chile also.
Oh, San Francisco, Chile?
Yeah.
Great. It's
How is the mic from here? Is this any better or is it still too echoey?
Roger.
Keep talking.
For breakfast today, I had Greek yogurt with some blueberries and some sliced almonds. And then.
You say that every morning.
Same thing, huh?
It's not bad. Is it just standing on the table right now?
It sure is.
What if you moved it closer to, like...
How would I do that?
Whatever did last time worked.
I have to hold it. Yeah, that's what works. Right. It's a pain in the ass. But all right, I'll hold it.
You don't have to hold it now. You can wait till the show starts.
Sorry. You don't have a poker. To raise
Whoa. Insist. I'm gonna add a Netflix earnings bit.
Ooh.
The earnings just came out. I haven't actually read the details yet, but the TechCrunch headline says they blew away expectations. Today said it added 5.2 million new subscribers this quarter, well above the 3.2 million that it expected itself.
Stock is up 15% in after-hours trading. I'm sorry, it's up 9%. It's up $14.20. Kaboom. Go Netflix.
Oh, I said a show was so invested in that company when it dipped. Remember when the stocks dipped because he said he was going to separate?
Quickster, yeah.
And there's a San Francisco, Minnesota, San Francisco, Puerto Rico. San Francisco, Colorado.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
There are about 20 San Franciscos in the nation of Mexico, 3 in Guatemala, 3 in Honduras, 1 in Ecuador, 1 in Argentina. Yes, Chile has 3.
Did you guys hear that?
Hear what?
Good.
Excellent. Nice. That's what you wanted to happen. Okay, good. All right, so Veronica, this one's going to be yours. It's super short.
Okay.
You got Netflixed.
Hello.
It's funny that as Netflix's earnings get better, it becomes less of a story.
Yeah.
So in Cord Killers, the first time there were these big earnings reports from Netflix on subscriber numbers, it was top story on Cord Killers, right? Because it was like, okay, here's
going to work.
Now that they've expanded internationally, how is it doing? Now it's like, oh, wow, better than expected. We'll put that in the front lines. So Veronica Belmont, host of Ireland, a new podcast from Mozilla.
Watch Veronica hosting Ireland.
And Rob Reed, author of After On and Year Zero. What's the After On release date exactly?
August 1.
August 1. Okay, just want to make sure mm-hmm. that I had that right.
Tuesday, the 1st of August.
And what was your Medium? Bookstores? Pull that up, the Medium page for that.
Yeah, so let's see. You can find it really, I don't know the URL by heart, but go to medium.com/@Rob Reed and it'll be there. Or I can just pull this sucker up.
So let me show you what I have.
One thing about this, Roger, and I don't know if it has to do with positioning of your headset or something, but you're a little lower volume-wise than you usually are.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, it was probably just positioning.
Is that better?
Yeah, the URL is about 800 characters long, so I'd say go to @RobReed, and it's called The Future of Augmented Reality Ain't Pokemon Go.
Boom. Latest right there.
Boom.
Yeah, that's the link I have in the show notes directly to the Nuco.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to take our stream live. Hello, everyone. We are live. Hi. It's full house today. We got two Rogers, one Veronica, and a Rob Reed.
And a Partridge.
Hello.
Roger is testing out a streaming system. That's why there's two of them.
My apologies to everyone if you hear any weird audio. Anyone hearing an echo from me?
Nope.
Not excellent. Right now. So only I will be bothered.
We are going to we're going to have a lot to cover here. So you guys want to go ahead? Are you guys ready to just go ahead and jump in?
Ready to rock, man.
Sure.
Ms. Belmont.
Am I delayed or something?
No.
Okay.
You were right on time.
Because I said yes, and then you said Miss Belmont after I had already said yes.
No, I was I was delayed, I think.
Oh.
So keep, Veronica, just keep your mic, maybe, sorry, half an inch away from your mic. Well, an inch. Yeah, that's good. Thanks. Sorry.
Okay, here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, July 17th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Veronica Belmont, host of IRL, a new podcast from Mozilla, alongside, because it's Monday.
And that it is.
She had yogurt and blueberries for breakfast, as usual.
That's how I check sound, Tom. You got to ask people what they had for breakfast. That's
You're
how you get them talking.
You're very consistent in your breakfast choices, as I have checked sound with you many times over the years. I'm just saying.
I like yogurt, Tom. Yeah. What can I say?
I actually have pretty much the same thing. So maybe
good protein. Greek yogurt. It's good for you.
Someone who also, I am sure, eats a healthy breakfast and is joining us today is author of Year Zero and forthcoming book After On. Mr. Rob Reed is with us. How's it going, Rob?
Things are well. I had coffee for breakfast.
Ah, I also had coffee for breakfast. I am the unifying force between your two breakfasts.
I also had coffee for breakfast. Oh, okay. I'm self-unifying.
You don't need me. All right. Well, we've got a lot to talk about, including the future of augmented reality, some quantum computing, and whether we should be afraid of AI. So let's start with a few tech things you should know about. Samsung Pay will begin accepting PayPal as a payment method. Merchants who use PayPal subsidiary Braintree will also be able to offer Samsung Pay as a checkout option. So it works both ways.
Yes, LinkedIn launched a desktop app for Windows 10, making it available as a pinnable live tile and delivering Action Center notifications. Alerts can include messages, profile views, and more. The new app is rolling out in the Windows Store and will be available in 22 languages.
Of course, Microsoft owns LinkedIn, so a lot of folks were looking to
synergy.
See, yeah, how this would happen. The HTC U11 became the first smartphone to add hands-free Amazon voice service support. Unlike the app on the Huawei Mate 9, the user does not need to launch an app to access her, the Amazon Voice Services assistant person. The app is available in the Google Play Store in the U.S. It comes to the U.K. next month and Germany in August.
To clarify, Amazon is not using her as their artificial
Correct.
Intelligence.
No Scarlett Johansson. No fictional AI is being used by HTC U11. Right.
Just
Robin?
She who will not be named. Yeah. Netflix announced it added 5.2 million new subscribers this quarter, beating its own expectations of 3.2 million. More than 4 million were international subscribers. Netflix said it had earnings of 15 cents per share on revenue of $2.79 billion.
You just almost caused a stock crash there.
Oh, wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, man. So Netflix keeps saying, look at how much money we're making. And stock analysts keep saying, look at how many subscribers you keep adding. But it's still good for both, I guess. So that's okay. Here's some more top stories. The BBC reporting that the UK government will continue a plan begun under Prime Minister David Cameron to require porn websites to verify that users are 18 before allowing them to access websites. Now, we're not talking about the pop-up that says click here if you're 18. We're talking about actual verification. So sites would need controls, like maybe they would use credit card verification or something like that, in place by April 2018 or risk being blocked under the Digital Economy Act. Digital Minister Matt Hancock is in the process of putting a written statement to the House of Commons today.
Oh, so now kids have to be 18 and have a credit card to look at porn.
They have to have so a credit card that says they're 18.
I predict an explosion of credit card theft in the UK. I'm just going to put that out there.
It's already
or an explosion
hot.
Of credit card applications.
Yeah.
That too, yes.
And birth dates that have been changed. No one should use their proper birthday on the internet. Anyway, do you hear about MySpace? Apparently, you could recover anybody's MySpace account as long as you knew their birthday.
Oh, my God.
A lot of people on Twitter said, well, you shouldn't have signed up with your real birthday anyway.
Fascinating. Atari released more details on the Atari Box, a game console that will come with classic Atari games along with, quote, current content. Atari showed two versions of the box, one with a wood grain front, the other with glass back and red. Both new designs playing on the original Atari models. There's an SD card slot, HDMI port, and four USB ports. No other details were yet released.
Yeah, they're dribbing and drabbing this thing out there, saying they want to show it as they go. And this design isn't even final. They are taking into account feedback from people as they put these pictures out there.
That's awesome. What is new? What is current content?
I don't know. That's what everybody wonders. Does that mean a new Roller Coaster Tycoon version? Or does it mean like an Android store? It's hard to say, but it is smart of Atari to release this information on the same day that a new Blade Runner 2049 trailer drops, where Atari is prominently placed, and also in advance of the upcoming Ready Player One release, which is all about 80s nostalgia.
Personally, I'm waiting for the next Sega console.
Don't joke. Somebody's going to do that, and Sega probably should if they want to rake in a little extra money. Do you know how
I'm
many...
Not- joking? Yeah. I was dead serious about that.
Do you know
it's
how many
only
dream,
question,
mini
Sonic
Dreamcasts?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Sonic. I loved Sonic on the Genesis. Oh my gosh. That would get me right in the feels.
Yeah, the code word is the Sega Deuteronomy, so it could just be a couple years off. Just sit tight.
IBM announced its Z mainframe, or for those of you in the UK, the Z mainframe, or Canada, or Australia. Anyway, the Z mainframe can handle 12 billion encrypted transactions a day. Uses AES 256-bit encryption on 13 gigabytes of data per second per chip. Normal Z mainframe has about 24 chips, depends on the configuration. The upshot of this is it could allow companies to encrypt every level of its network. All the apps, all the transactions, all the things happening internally would be encrypted. System can also invalidate all its keys temporarily if it detects an intrusion to stop the intrusion from proceeding.
I wonder if they use Google Authenticator to sign back in.
There's something kind of chilling about the name of this thing. They're kind of decreeing that they've come to the end of computing. Aren't they? Where do you go from Z or Z? It's over, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, the Y mainframe would beg a question, wouldn't it?
Well, the Y mainframe is so yesteryear. I mean, this is Z. Yeah. I mean, I guess they could start another alphabet.
Yeah, the Z1, the Z2, I guess. I don't know. It is the nomenclature is interesting, but even more interesting is this idea of saying, you know what? You need to secure network, big business. You need mainframes. You need big computing power. And up till now, even big computing power was not both big enough and affordable enough at the same time to be able to market to you. But if you're a bank, you're going to want to investigate this, because the problem isn't that networks aren't secure on the outside. The problem is that social engineering very easily allows people to get inside the network where things are no longer encrypted.
Yeah.
Bloomberg obtained a presentation slide showing Google is offering science labs and AI researchers access to its quantum machines over the internet. The slides have details of a lab called the Embryonic Quantum Data Center. That doesn't sound intimidating. And an open source effort to develop code for quantum computers called Project Q. Earlier this year, Google promised that by the end of the year, it would prove supremacy, meaning its quantum computers would work as well or better than existing supercomputers. The goal is to spur development of tools with the aim of making it a cloud service. IBM and Rigetti Computing offer similar access to quantum computers.
So again, we are moving into a new mainframe era here, where things that are big and expensive and hard to implement are now being delivered as services over the internet. The other interesting part of this story is this... I don't want to be too spoilery, Rob, but this very clearly bears on a part of your new story where quantum computers play into the fiction.
Yeah, the thing that's fascinating about quantum computing to me in general, and also as a storyteller, is it's kind of the wild card in the deck. If quantum computings really start to perform out of the bounds way, which could happen tomorrow, could happen in 100 years, and could happen never. It really, really resorts what we can do with computers. If we can get a quantum computer that can really perform as a general computer. And then the other thing that's kind of amusing about this is, even if we can't, there's one thing that we know quantum computers are going to be incredibly good at, which is breaking encryption. So the fact that this is announced the same day as IBM's Jay-Z mainframe, which is encrypting everything, it's a little bit ironic. But yeah, I mentioned as a storyteller, because that's when you're setting fiction in the present day, it's quantum computing is a great device to employ, because crazy stuff could happen tomorrow. And it does actually play a role in my book, but I don't want to go too deeply into it for the same reason that you said, Tom.
Yeah,
it gets spoilery.
Well, according to this Bloomberg article, Robin Bloom Cohut, a technical staffer at Sandia National Lab, says right now the only algorithms that run for any good on a quantum computer are chemistry simulations. But of course, everybody wants to crack the cryptography part of this, because suddenly that gives anybody with a quantum computer an advantage, and it also allows for stronger cryptography. It works both ways. Now, as far as cracking that, your book does have a good explanation of how that might work, that you've developed after talking to some people who know about this stuff.
Yeah, and I'm very freaked out to say that I talked to yet another person after I finished writing the book, and they confirmed it. And I say freaked out because it really gives me the creeps how this works. So for those who don't know much about quantum computing, what its superpower is that it allows every single bit in the system to be both a zero and a one simultaneously. So to make a simple example, if we were trying to crack, let's say it's an 8-bit key. So it's one of 256 answers. A normal classical computer might try one attempt after another and go through 256 attempts and try every possible solution. A quantum computer can de facto be in all 256 states simultaneously, because every bit in it is both a zero and a one at the same time, and crack it instantaneously. That's why quantum computing could be really good at cryptography someday. Now, what's creepy about this is one asks, how does that happen? And the answer, according to the theoreticians, is this. Our computer just tries one key, but meanwhile, 255 other computers in parallel universes, identical computers, are all trying different combinations. Somebody gets it right, yells bingo, the other computers hear it, and they all get the right answer simultaneously. So all 256 of us have suddenly got the right answer. Now, when you ask people, you really, really push people who are deep in the field, are you sure that's what's happening? The explanation I got back very recently from somebody who's a real expert said there's really two explanations for this. One is this parallel universe thing. The other is I don't want to talk about it. And there is no other choice yet. And I kind of don't want to talk about it, but that's what happens in my book, and it seems that's what's happening in reality.
Well, and if that sounds like crazy nut talk to you, that's typical of trying to understand quantum computing when you're not actually talking about the math, is it sounds like crazy nut talk. The problem isn't that we're talking about 256 alternate computers. The problem is, can we get 8 bits to reliably stay in superposition and read out data? It's not that the quantum theory doesn't work. The problem with quantum computers is getting the machinery to work the way, to take advantage of that quantum principle. At least that's the issue as I understand it.
Yeah, and there's basically two approaches that are being taken right now. And so there's a company in Canada called D-Wave, which is the biggest company in quantum computing. They've been around about 15 years. They're shipping systems that they characterize as 2,000 qubit systems. 2,000 qubits is an enormous number, particularly when you understand that Google is playing with 25-30 qubits. Now, the difference is D-Wave is taking an approach which is more like an ASIC, more like an application-specific IC, where the computers are engineered to do very, very particular problems, things like quantum annealing, cryptography, and other things. Whereas Google, some other operations in China, Rigetti, who was mentioned in that story, they're all doing this highly, highly perfected thing. What you're talking about, where they're trying to keep everything in a perfect quantum state, can be much, much more powerful if you make it work, but you end up having far fewer qubits for a far shorter period of time, and apparently error correction becomes a colossal problem. Like, you can, in theory, get into situations where you need 1,000 qubits to error correct for a single one. So it's still very, very hard to make this stuff work.
All right, if that hasn't blown your mind, how about this? Elon Musk told a gathering of U.S. governors this weekend that the government needs to start regulating artificial intelligence. Like now. Musk has been warning about the dangers of AI for a while. You've probably seen the headlines. He told the governors, quote, "I think by the time we are reactive in AI regulation, it's too late." Because he believes it is, quote, "a fundamental risk to the existence of civilization." Now, Musk is not referring to machine learning. He's not referring to Siri. He's talking about artificial general intelligence, where you don't have to do the training, that the AI sort of takes off and starts learning on its own. Some researchers debate whether that's even going to happen, whether that's even possible. But enough believe it is, and enough are working on it, that it has Musk saying, let's figure this out before it happens, if it does.
Yeah, which is a really frightening thing. The only thing that gives me a little bit of calmness on this is that he's taking this to the governors. I'm going to get a lot scarier when he goes screaming to Larry and Sergey, because it's not that much that the governor of Alaska is on this thing, right? But he has access. The thing that's frightening is A, he's a lot smarter than almost all of us. And B, he has access to what's happening. And he even mentioned that in the article. He said, you know, very, very, you know, emphatically, "I have seen stuff that you have not seen, and it is scaring the bejesus out of me."
That's not at all intimidating either. Lots of not quite so intimidating stories in today's lineup.
I mean, again, a lot of it has to do with uncertainty. Generally, these sorts of things play out a lot less dangerously than we fear over time. But occasionally there is a nuclear bomb that somebody does figure out how to invent.
And hey, how long? I mean, he's trying to stop us now while we still have time.
Yeah.
When things can progress far enough that suddenly it's actually an issue, it's going to be too late.
There was a lot of talk about that before the Manhattan Project, right? It was like, what do we do if we create this? And then we created it and we're still trying to figure out what to do with it.
There's an amazing story about the Manhattan Project, which is Teller and some of the other senior engineers ran an equation, and they felt that there was a non-zero chance that the atmosphere would catch fire and incinerate us all. And they had a, ultimately, they reduced the risk of that in their, to their satisfaction, down to a very, very tiny, tiny, tiny risk. But nonetheless, they had to proceed with that possibility, and they decided that they did, because ending World War II was worth the risk, because the risk was de minimis at that point.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to think, you know, that the chances that some have already taken with, you know, existential risk.
And Musk works with a company that uses machine learning. So he is constantly looking at this, and he's just a guy interested in this sort of thing, right? Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, you can subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. It gets you all the things you need to know in an efficient package. That's a podcast. It's also on the Amazon Echo as a flash briefing in the United States, working on the UK, trust me. And it is available on the Anchor app at anchor.fm. Also want to throw a thanks out to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. I was proud of them today because the annual post that DEF CON has been canceled was submitted to our subreddit and voted up. And all five comments were about how, yeah, that's what they do every year. They say this to, you know, scare away the people who don't read far enough to figure out what's going on. So if you want to see what's going on in the world, check out dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Let's talk real quickly about something in your book that isn't in today's news, but it is often in our news at Daily Tech News Show, Rob. And you have a post up today. It's the first of 8 posts that are not only articles, but also interviews. And I'm helping you out with a podcast version of this about issues that you used in your book After On. And today's post is about augmented reality.
Indeed. This is, you can see the little lock, actually, for those of you who are watching at the top of the screen. There's actually a link to our podcast. So I'm going to just mention real briefly the podcast that Tom and I did, which goes deep, deep, deep into the issues connected to the technology and science of After On, which is my upcoming novel. Is actually available to Medium members starting today. Most people aren't Medium members, but those who are can hit play and hear that thing right now. So so augmented reality is a big topic in the book. The first lengthy scene in the book takes place in a San Francisco bar called Bermuded Branch, which actually exists. And this kind of sketchy guy ends up basically coming up to my main female character in a very creepy manner. And unbeknownst to her, anybody, he's wearing very, very advanced augmented reality glasses. And he basically is given enough of an information dump that he's able to feign sort of a good friend-to-friend connection with her, which gets her to take her guard down. And so that happens in the book. The book is basically set in the present day, but there's 2 or 3 places where I bring technology a little bit forward, and this is one of them. So in researching that and lots of aspects of the book, I was really blessed to have access to a ton of brilliant scientists and technologists. And when I was writing the book, I ended up embedding all these, like, kind of in the first draft, don't worry, it's not actually in the book, 15, 20 page digressions about how cool quantum computing is, or synthetic biology, or augmented reality. And my editor's like, no, that is kind of lousy storytelling. We've got to expunge that, which she was right. And so my consolation prize is to myself is to do these 8 really fairly lengthy interview-based podcasts in which we go deep, deep, deep into the technology and the science connected to the novel. So first episode, because the book opens with this, is about augmented reality. And the for those who can access it, the podcast is now up on Medium. It will be live to the world on August 1st. And we'll figure out a way to remind people, Tom, you and I, because you're my co-host, on August 1st, that it's now up as a podcast. But the post on Medium talks about this really interesting company called Meta. And I interviewed its CEO at length, a guy named Marone Gribbets. And Meta, to me, is one of the 2 leading companies at this moment in augmented reality, the other being Microsoft. Microsoft has the HoloLens, which is a very interesting platform. Meta is now shipping something called the Meta 2. There's other companies in the space. Magic Leap down in Florida is quite famous for having raised over $1 billion. Unfortunately, they're equally famous for having not yet shipped a product. So we don't really know what Magic Leap is up to. There's a couple other companies that are more optical companies. They don't have integrated OSs and so forth. Obviously, Apple and others will get into the domain, but Meta is a really, really interesting and important leading company right now. And what I like about them is they made this very gutsy bet on the Enterprise. And so Marone has actually been shipping augmented reality headsets for 3 or 4 years now. He did a Kickstarter out of his dorm room. And his first customers, he called up 400 customers, talked to them, and found out they were all interested in productivity and enterprise applications. So the Meta One is all about the enterprise. And what that means is he tethers it to a computer. He doesn't have to worry about people doing live action role play in the park. It's not portable. Because it's tethered to a computer, because he's betting on the enterprise, it means that he doesn't have the weight issues. He doesn't have. He can have a very, very chunky CPU. He doesn't have heat dissipation issues. He doesn't have battery issues. And the result to me, I've tried them both, the Meta to me blows the HoloLens away, because the HoloLens is untethered, and that's really cool, and it's really, really powerful, and it's important, but it's a much less chunky system. So I talk about all of that in the article. And then, of course, Marone and I go into that in the podcast as well.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people may be surprised to learn is that there's an augmented reality company out there that is shipping products being used by companies in their workplace. Like you said, we hear a lot about HoloLens, but that's a really expensive development kit, not something that the average person can afford or the average person is going to implement. And of course, Magic Leap gets a lot of attention for not having shipped things. So really, Meta has been flying under the radar for most people, even though it is doing augmented reality and even onto its second version out there in the marketplace.
Yeah, and it's $1,000. Now, there's a hell of a wait list. I think the wait list is in the, you know, single-digit months, but it's $1,000. And in our interview, I asked Marone quite explicitly, is that, do you need all these peripherals and stuff? He's like, no, you can get going right out of the gate. Now, you've got to know what you're doing when you get your hands on that thing. I mean, I think that those who are buying it are awfully capable at extending it and making it do interesting and powerful stuff. But it has a pretty cool user environment. I mean, basically, I asked Marone, okay, is Meta a hardware company, an application company, or an OS company ultimately? And don't say yes. And he said, you know, if I have to pick one, it's an OS company. And they are creating their own user interface and language of interaction, which I found to be very powerful. I mean, the thing with the HoloLens is you need to learn this taxonomy of gestures in order to use it. And it tracks your hand and it knows, okay, the guy is now making the open this document or the click down the menu. It's much more natural in Meta. And they also have this really wide field of view. It's about 90 degrees compared to the HoloLens's 45. And that's an artifact out of this bold decision to make it tethered, which kind of sucks on a certain level. But having done that, it's a much, much more enveloping visual environment.
Well, we got a call actually in from Mark, who went into a closet to share his thoughts on VR. This is the VR headset device that we were talking about last week that might be coming from Oculus that is wireless, and why he might want to have a portable wireless VR headset.
Hey, Mark here from Podient, recording in a bathroom cupboard. Just a thought on the Oculus Pacific idea. I've been looking for somewhere to co-work for a while, but because I've got really bad eyesight, hunching over a laptop for 8 hours a day is just not something I can do. And most co-working places don't let you store a monitor. And I don't want to lug around an iMac or something similar every day that I want to go and use a co-working space. So the idea of sitting with an Oculus, a lightweight device on my head that is just a massive screen, and being able to sit and work at my keyboard kind of feels cool. It might be slightly weird for the rest of the patrons at the co-working space. But, you know, it could be something that you just lift off your head and say, oh, yes, I will have that cup of coffee. But I really like that idea as just having a portable screen that can be as big as you need it to be, doesn't need the positional tracking, and is something that you can take with you and work wherever you go, whether you're going to plug it into a laptop or whatever, I think is a really cool idea.
Thanks, Mark. Actually, that cupboard recording worked out very well. Veronica, I was curious, you know, you've done a lot of co-working spaces. Could you see yourself doing this, where you just pop on a VR headset to be your display?
No. I mean, maybe. Gosh, I guess I'd have to use it first to find out. Sorry, I muted myself because there's construction next door and there. It's very beep.
Because you're at a co-working space and they're
technically, I kind of am. Yeah, no, we're at a permanent office now, but I did do co-working for a very long time. It would be nice to use the headset for privacy. It would be nice to feel as though you were in your own little bubble. But I don't know, the extended wear kind of thing, I think would tire me out after a while. I can't be in VR for very long. It would depend on how comfortable the AR headset was, or if it was just built into my glasses.
Rob, I know you do a lot of out and about working. What about you? Would you risk the finger pointing that you would never see because your face is covered by a VR headset?
You know, I need to point out that I do not own a single share of Meta stock because I'm going to sound like a complete shill for the company. But I think this is where, you know, Veronica's talking about weight, and there is the awkwardness about being completely entombed in this thing. I'm less worried about looking like a bozo because I'm going to look like a bozo whether I'm wearing VR or AR. I'm a lot worried about taking the thing off and finding out that my wallet's gone, right? And so I think that, you know, the tethered thing where you have an AR headset, first of all, so you can see the world around you, and B, it's plugged into your laptop. It's not a completely freestanding wireless thing. Obviously, long-term, the ideal is freestanding and wireless. Anybody's going to want that. But given where we are in Moore's Law today, I would personally rather have a lightweight headset that's really, really powerful, that's not completely isolated from the world around me, and do my work in that domain. So I would vote for something AR-ish. And yes, I do realize I sound like a meta shill at this point. Apologies.
But he really doesn't own any stock. So there you go.
I really don't.
Right. Let's head back to talking about Amazon voice services in a way that won't set off your Amazon voice services. It's Chris Christensen, time for our Tech in Travel Minute.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. All you travel and tech fans may be interested to know that the Amazon assistant, She Who Must Not Be Named, that has a new skill, Compliments of Kayak.com, which lets you track flights, use Kayak Explorer, or book a hotel through the afore unmentioned Amazon device. That sounds pretty cool, but my actual experience was that it was better for entertainment than actual utility. The Kayak Explorer is a very useful feature of Kayak, which lets you say, where can I go for $500, for instance, or where can I go for $500 in August? A useful feature. The voice-activated feature, however, only seemed to tell me domestic destinations, so I couldn't find any way of getting it to tell me international destinations because the US ones were always cheaper, and it only gave me 3 destinations, so not as useful as the website. I found the flight search function to be fairly easy as long as you knew the flight number. Trying to book a hotel, I ended up at some point playing Hotel California or trying to book a hotel in Liverpool, England instead of Livermore, California. My Echo Dot seemed to know about only 2 hotels in Livermore once I finally got it to the right city, while Hotels.com seems to know 100. So I would say it's not quite ready for prime time yet. But maybe you could check a flight status on it. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Just doesn't want you to leave the country, it sounds like.
But we'll let him go to Livermore, California. That is such an unusual destination.
There must be something Amazon has going on there that it's trying to encourage. But yes, thank you, Chris. Good to know that you, at least to a certain point, can use the Amazon Echo to book some travel. Before we get out of here, we got loads of good feedback on Friday's show. One of the things I like is when we talk about an issue like encryption and we get reasonable arguments from the other side, and we got tons of those. Big thanks to everybody who wrote in. Ned had a few points in favor of helping government surveillance. He points out that encryption that most services have doesn't use end-to-end encryption. So his point being that any law that Australia is talking about wouldn't affect a lot of these companies anyway, because if it's not end-to-end, there are easier ways for them to get at your communications if you're under surveillance. In instances like iMessage, where a central server is used, Ned advocates for dual key encryption, where a second key is made for each account that the company can hand over when necessary. And we covered some of the objections before on the show about whether, you know, can you keep that key safe. He said the private company keys do not need to be accessible on a network of any kind, as they are only used for decryption when requested by law enforcement. This eliminates the security risk of them getting leaked. And if you still think this is a risk, consider that our public key infrastructure that protects all TLS traffic relies on just a handful of companies protecting their single master signing key. That is a much larger risk, but we trust them because of math and a big concrete safe somewhere. He continues, last but not least, this leaves the Trust No One services that use no central server for key sharing. Think Signal. This is like a very small percentage of the market, and for good or for ill, can easily be declared illegal. Now, obviously, criminals will still use these services if they want to be communicating privately, but if it is illegal to do so, then there will be a reasonable grounds for suspicions. So, I don't know about you guys, but some problems with this is if the keys aren't kept online, which is very good with security, you're right, The system can't update the keys easily, therefore it can't maintain forward secrecy, which isn't necessarily as important with the master system of TLS, but it's very important with user accounts. That's where keys are refreshed so that old keys mightn't be intercepted can no longer be used. It also puts all the keys in one basket, so to speak. Of course, Ned discounts that risk, so that's fair. And as to the last point of encryption not being a service, it is math. Outlawing services in no way stops people from using encryption. It just stops them from using those services. So if you made Signal illegal, people would just stop using it. It wouldn't be available, but the bad guys would just go roll their own. There's plenty of open source encryption out there that wouldn't have a second key. And I think that's the biggest objection to a lot of these, like, hey, I've got a way to use two keys that will be safe for everybody. The criminals won't necessarily use those systems.
That was very thorough.
Yeah, thank you, Ned, for writing in on that. Also, John Cornell is one of the many people, Peter Wells was another one, who pointed out that Prime Minister Turnbull of Australia, is a very tech-savvy prime minister. He owned and ran tech companies, including being the chairman of one of the largest early ISPs, Osmail, which was bought out by IIINet in 2005. John says, I don't have a particular axe to grind. I just feel his latest stance on encryption is no more than politics to appease a wing of his government. And several people recommended reading this post from Patrick Gray, and I will put a link into the show notes to that as well. And I think you absolutely should read it if you're very interested in this. He does a security-focused podcast called Risky Business. And in this post, he lays out what he thinks is the reality behind what's being discussed, despite the political rhetoric. Essentially, he argues that what Australia and the other Five Eyes countries want is an easy way to share metadata and content across borders while respecting warrants. Right now, there's not a good system for that. He also describes tech companies pushing updates to targeted individuals, say by UDID, so that update would not affect anyone else. It couldn't be reused and would weaken the security of the target device, but not the encryption. In other words, government-authorized Trojans. Mm. So not putting a backdoor into encryption, but saying have the tech companies work with government to plant stuff on the devices of criminal targets.
That's at least one more layer of responsibility in some ways.
Yeah, and it does, you know, he's saying, look, you could do this with warrants. It's no different than any other kind of surveillance. He's also saying he's not 100% certain it's the right way to go, but he's like, that's where the conversation should be had, about where the line between privacy and security is, not about weakening encryption.
I'm really interested in this idea, and that's something I haven't really heard about before, and I'm sure there are many, many good reasons why it's a terrible idea. But, you know, possibly. Initially I'm like, oh, you know, if the tech companies get a warrant and they have to work with the law enforcement, I mean, they could put restrictions on that data if it's found that nothing came of it. Like maybe law enforcement only has access to it for a very short amount of time, or maybe it's held on the tech company servers and they can't take it off site. There's other ways that they could potentially protect the data beyond just breaking, like, you know, if they break the encryption, that kind of screws it for everyone.
Right.
But if they install a backdoor that is under watch and they can monitor where the data is going, I wonder if that's a safer way of doing it.
And breaking
almost
encryption,
like escrow or something.
Yeah,
totally. Mm.
Breaking encryption breaks it for law-abiding people, too, because,
right. Again,
some people misinterpreted when I said it's math. People said, no, but math allows you to do dual encryption. You could have two keys. I'm like, yeah, and then the criminals won't use that system. So they can go use math themselves. They can multiply two prime numbers together and make a hard-to-factor number themselves. Like, that part of encryption is not difficult. So really what you're talking about is can you get to the devices? And that's extremely interesting. Rob, I know there's some things about that coming in our podcast and in After On, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. No, this whole issue of security and government intrusion and government hacking is a major, major theme of it. And it's a terrible creative tension, because I just did one of the interviews I did, as you know, for our podcast series is with Cindy Cohn of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Cindy runs it and is an incredibly strident and articulate defender of the notion of privacy absolutism and you know, sort of free speech absolutism. And I think what you do get into this question, though, when there are authentic concerns on the part of law enforcement, and another person I interviewed was Sam Harris, who is also very much of an absolutist on free speech, but very, very concerned about issues of terrorism. Sometimes the state does have a very, very legitimate interest in accessing things that technology companies could prevent. And this escrow idea that you guys started batting around is pretty interesting. There has to be a middle way, and it is ultimately deeply in the interest of both the tech companies and law enforcement to come up with something that everybody can feel comfortable about, and it's got to be out there.
Yeah. But I like this post at risky.biz/bandmath, because my problem with it is I look at it and I say, yes, but that's not what Prime Minister Turnbull was saying. That's not what Attorney General Brandis was saying. And until we get their actual bill text, we can't tell whether you're right or not. But if he is right, if Patrick Gray is right, that the bill will not be as bad as everyone's thinking, this is a really important conversation to have about it. So we'll have that link in the show notes as well.
It's funny because the most recent episode of IRL that we're doing is on surveillance. And so I actually did an interview today with a woman who did a documentary on the investigatory powers bill that passed back in 2016 in the UK, and kind of how this relates to, you know, in British intelligence, or, you know, maybe other intelligence agencies, like tracking and saving data for, you know, up to a year, and how that affects citizens. And they, you know, the UK comes from a slightly different perspective, I think, on a lot of this stuff, because they've been so mired in the world of CCTV for so long, and kind of feeling as though they're always being watched anyway, and how that impacts them versus how it impacts people in the United States who aren't used to that kind of surveillance. It's an interesting topic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, speaking of IRL, folks, you can go subscribe and listen and watch Veronica Belmont. I'm sorry, listen, I guess, at IRLpodcast.org. You can watch the play button go by.
I could do that.
You've got all kinds of cool topics coming up there. Anything else to tell folks about?
Yeah, I started a new show on Anchor called Dogs I've Seen Today. It's also a podcast that you can subscribe to on iTunes. But I would suggest listening to it in Anchor, Dogs I've Seen Today. It's short. It's bite-sized. You'll love it.
I fully support this as part of my Summer of Puppies effort on Twitter to just make everyone relax for even if it's just 1 second every day.
Because you know what, Tom? I definitely needed to do another podcast.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
It just seemed like it would make sense to do something about dogs for once.
Both of us do. We
yeah, just more podcasts. Yeah.
And folks, if you liked the topic that was just in the news today, I didn't plan it this way. There was definitely quantum computing and AI. And of course, we're following up on the security news from last week. All of the things we talk about on this show have been turned into a really enjoyable story by Mr. Rob Reed.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So the novel's called After On. It comes out August 1st. And if you go to my Medium page, which is Rob Reed, actually, I'm sorry, medium.com/@Rob Reed, R-O-B-R-E-I-D. There's actually a couple of fabulous excerpts from the book that you can find right now. And so you can start reading this sucker, even though it doesn't come out until August 1st.
Let me tell you, if you wet your whistle with it, you're going to want to read the rest of the story. But go check it out. And if you like it, leave some hearts. That helps it rise in the rankings.
Yes, everybody on Medium loves to get those little hearts, the little recommend. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a cross between a retweet and a like. So yeah, it's everything good in one button.
Go check it out. Like we said, medium.com/@ Rob Reed, R-O-B-R-E-I-D. Thanks to everybody who gives a little value back to this show. We hope we're always giving you a lot of value, and we just ask for you to give as much as you can back. That includes James Fitzpatrick, Tom Borte, Suzanne, just Suzanne, that's fine. We love you, Suzanne. Thank you for supporting us, and everyone who supports us at patreon.com/DTNS or through PayPal. There's people who are like, you know what? I can't do the Patreon thing for whatever reason, but you can support us directly at PayPal. That's at dailytechnewsshow.com/support. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv, or at facebook.com/dailytechnewsshow, and our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Mr. Lamar Wilson. Talk to you then.
This show is is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was packed.
Man.
That was a good show.
I'm scared about Elon. Elon has spooked me, man.
He's
every time he
does this.
Yeah.
Well, I think the problem is you want to dismiss him and go, "Oh, Elon, you're exaggerating," but he is so often right about other things.
Oh yeah, then you're like, "Oh yeah, I forgot. You're the smartest person alive or close to it." Oh, that's right. You're the person who, after NASA spent 40-something years not getting past the moon, are going to put us on Mars in less than a decade.
Oh, sure, you could make an electric sports car company work. Oh, sure, you could put reusable rockets in space. Oh, sure, you could just throw out an idea for Hyperloop tunnels. Like, yeah, it's kind of a good track record he's got going on so far.
My favorite TED moment from this year is, okay, so Elon was on, he came to TED a few years ago, and he talked about what they called Grasshopper at the time, which was the reusable booster. And he showed this stirring that anybody who grew up as a rocketry geek and was infuriated with the fact that we haven't gotten past the moon, which is, you know, me and I'm sure most of the people in the room, he showed this inspiring thing of the booster going up 100 yards and then landing. And I almost started to cry. It was so cool. Now I think it's like 4 years later and he's landing these things out of orbit, and Chris Anderson asked him about it. He's like, Elon's like, "Yeah, sure took long enough." Like, he was humiliated that it had taken 4 years.
So embarrassed.
To get from going up 100 yards and coming down is like, he literally was just like, "Oh God, it sure took long enough. It's been 4 years."
How embarrassing, Elon Musk. I wish all people born on June 28th were that smart.
I didn't know you shared an Elon.
You share a birthday?
Also,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Me, Felicia, and Elon.
Felicia, and Elon.
Yeah.
Oh, how cool. How cool.
It's good company.
Oh, we got some echo coming. Is that you, Roger?
Is that you, Roger?
Yeah. Roger.
Echo.
You know, for title, I really like Dark Redeemer's All Systems AR Go.
That's good. That's totally good. I love that.
We've got some other good ones in here too, but that's my favorite. Beating the Atari out of classic gaming. Atari.
Yeah.
Quantum appeal theory. There's one from Chum Donkey that's entirely written in binary, which I find impressive.
It's impressive, cool. But
I can't.
Mostly unusable. Right. Largely unusable.
Don't AI didn't warn ya. I like it. I like it. Elon Musk, we need laws of robotics now. Not bad. Destroy all humans.
Right.
Veronica
all
tries
systems
to do more podcasts.
Go.
Yeah, yeah. All systems AR go. That is it, the one.
Dig it.
That's the win R.
Mm-hmm. So
there really are two Rogers.
There are. I'm not even joking.
My God.
I can't hear you, Roger.
Nobody
can
hear you.
See that you're trying to talk.
We can see you twice, though, which is something.
Yeah, one of you is trying to talk.
One of you is trying to talk. The other one is just being very stoic.
So both being exceedingly Roger-like.
Yeah. The many aspects of Roger Chang.
You should take Roger if you haven't yet. Are you guys both in LA?
Yeah.
Hey, you guys should go to the Roger Room. It's a fabulous bar.
Nice.
You can make Roger pick up the tab, or maybe they'll host it for you.
Yeah, maybe
there.
They'll pick up his tab for him.
It's quite close to the Beverly Center.
Okay.
Kind of smack between the Beverly Center and the Grove. And
you don't need to be
Los
a Roger
Angeles
to get in, or you just, if you know a Roger, they can get you in.
You just have to identify yourself as Roger. They don't card.
Got it.
It's one of those bars. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Roger.
Not one of those carding Roger bars where you have to prove your name. Just, oh, yeah, I'm Roger.
You have to get those fake Roger IDs.
All that stuff, yeah. Such trouble. And then they ask you the trick question like, oh, you're Roger. What letter does your name start with?
If I may,
kind of like when they ask you what your astrological...
Yes. What that reminds me of Bourbon and Branch, where you have to give the code word to get in. With
what's the password? It's cool.
Which reminds me that one of the things I loved about reading After On is having been in San Francisco during large portions of when your book is written or where your book is written, I recognize so many things, including Momo's.
Bourbon and Branch.
I went to Momo's during the dot-com era, so that was perfect. And I went to Bourbon and Branch many times.
Yeah, and I kind of almost want to have a launch party at Bourbon and Branch or an after party or something like that.
Oh, yeah, back in the library. Yeah. It'd be cool.
I actually should do that. Yeah, I got a couple weeks here.
Roger is giving tacit consent to everything he's
I kind of hear this faint Roger-like sound in the background.
So when he hosts, he just can't talk. He can control everything, but he won't be able to
talk.
I don't know.
He was able
show.
To talk earlier. I don't know what happened.
I think somebody's not going to get their $15 donation as a result of all this.
Not yet. I'm tired.
Should I go now?
That's up to you. We probably got another 5-10 minutes before, but you can go whenever you want.
I've got the only right, got the room until now.
Oh, hey, we can hear Roger now. Are you sure you want to leave?
Oh, it's okay. He can cover for me.
All right. Thanks, V.
I'll see you guys later. Bye. Good to see you, Rob.
See ya.
Bye.
Good to see you.
Yes, we can hear you, Roger. Oh, now can we not hear you?
Well, we could hear you.
Hello.
We hear you.
Hello. You're back.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Indeed.
Nothing.
We keep hearing. Yes, we can hear you.
We hear you.
Yes, can you hear me or no?
Yes.
Everyone can hear me. Give me a thumbs up.
Yes. He probably can't hear
us. I can hear. Great. I can't hear you.
It's either one or the other.
I mean, I understand what's
going
on.
Take your pick.
No, I know. And this is why when we were talking about the system earlier, Roger was like, well, I think I can do it all on one system because I have enough power, which you're right. But always trying to do things on one system causes these kinds of difficulties. And they're not unsolvable, mind you.
So I've encountered a paradox. I've been hearing, you guys heard about this restaurant called Itza?
Yeah. I don't know anything about it, but that rings a bell.
It's the robotic restaurant.
Okay.
Here in San Francisco. And so it's like there are no humans. It's like an automaton.
It's like an
automat. In light of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an automat. So in light of that, why are they only open 7 to 5 Monday through Friday?
Because there has to be a human.
Like, are these unionized
robots?
There
has to be at least one human around. That's why.
There are, but like, this is the branding, man. Oh no. It closes at freaking 3:30 in the afternoon. I was going to go over for a late lunch.
Do the robots cook the food?
Well, if I were the Itza people, I would have my customers believe that, but it's inconceivable that they cook the food because they wouldn't be knocking off at 3:30 in the afternoon.
That's why they close at 5. And also electrical.
Yeah, that's why they... I guess so, but it's like, look, this is probably, you know, it's like they're trying to be the hot new thing. I believe they're venture-backed. You got to create your mystique here and like, all right, bite the bullet. You should at least be open the same hours of a normal human restaurant.
Well, 7 to 5 means 7 to 5 is coffee shop hours.
One of them, there's only two. One of them closes at 3:30.
Yeah.
That's so one's like, 7 to 5, one's 3:30.
That's like Starbucks or something. Well, Starbucks
it's not
is
even
open
Starbucks
later.
Is open like 18 hours. I'm just dismayed because I was hoping to go down and get myself a robotic meal, and I was thinking I could squeeze it in this evening. But
so they must focus on the breakfast crowd if they're open at 7.
Yeah, they must. They must.
Maybe that's it. They don't want to make dinners.
Yeah, because
they're
robots
basically
need
skipping
to
dinner. That's what
they're skipping dinner.
No, it's the menu, right? They can't get the robots to properly handle dinner food.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, because those robotic sous chefs are.
Yeah.
You know, you got to rely.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Okay, robots are great with eggs.
Yeah, it only goes so far, doesn't it?
It must be something like that. There must be something about dinner that's more complex that they don't want to deal with. I wonder what's their menu?
Man.
Can you see their menu?
No, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at them in
cube-shaped fried eggs.
I'm just sort of indignantly looking at their hours on Google, but it's oddly enough they usually link right to the website, and I don't see a. There we go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Mother.
Yes, we can hear you. But I guess he can't hear us.
No, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Oh, well, then why are you mother junkering?
No, because it took me like 10 minutes just to get. You know what? Just bring me the mixer.
Roger gives up. Fine.
Life has shown me I was in error.
It was worth a try, because you're not wrong. If you can make it work easily, then it's great to have it all in one system like that.
Okay, I've concluded that the robots are not cooking. They are merely dumping ingredients into bowls, because they kind of have quinoa bowls and salads. And that's about it.
And so they don't think they'll sell enough of those at dinner time.
I don't know. It's very odd, strange. Maybe it's vegetarian. It's like, why limit your, like, just go with the robot thing. Like, isn't that gimmick enough, right?
Yeah, but you can't get the robots to make too much.
I don't know.
You can't get them to make a nice steak.
Well, if the name of your restaurant rhymes with pizza, shouldn't it be like almost a legal obligation to serve pizza there?
You could just have frozen pizzas that the robots stick in an oven, right? No?
My goodness, yeah. This whole thing is a terrible disappointment to me.
It's so much more promise than delivery is what it sounds like.
But it was named industry's top in tech by Restaurant Business.
Wait, do they have, did it start just as coffee maybe?
I don't know.
Because I remember there was the robot coffee place, and now I can't remember if that was Itza.
No, I don't think they would have called it Itza if it was just coffee.
Well, it doesn't make sense, but it doesn't mean they didn't do it. Because Veronica went there. Cafe X.
Oh, Veronica went to Itza.
Cafe X. She went to Cafe X. Cafe X. That's the robot
coffee
place. That was the
robot coffee?
Yeah.
In San Francisco?
Yeah.
Does it still exist?
It wasn't that long ago, so it probably does.
Ooh, maybe that's what I'll do instead. I need to get my robot fixed somehow.
Seriously.
If you go to Denny's, the chefs are pretty wooden. Some would say even robotic.
So Cafe X is in the Metreon, open until 9:30. So less lazy robots there. Yeah, it looks robotic. That's pretty cool. Except I do like my local pizza an awful lot. I got to do some writing today, so.
Yeah, I don't think Cafe X is a hang around kind of place either.
Yeah, I do like to do that. Well, cool, man. My writing today is coming up with ingenious question and answer repartee for our for the podcast.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to that. We're going to knock out four of them, right?
I believe we will. So what I'm going to try to do, I think the fourness of our knocking out create two new words, it'll all be about me turning this around quickly and smoothly. So I think what I'd need to do is get you a good skeletal set of questions to think about and for me to think about and for us to say, like, by tomorrow or Wednesday, like, yeah, those are good questions. And then we have a couple of days to sort of gestate on them. And then I think it'll be pretty easy because, you know, we're kind of like 15 minutes toward the end of each of these things. We've already done it twice.
Yeah.
And man, our opening, I just can't get over how good our opening is. Thanks for working so hard
on
that
problem.
With me. It
I'm glad you like it.
So
much.
Good.
Yeah. It's nice
man,
and tight.
I love the way it sounds. Yeah. Yeah. And I love that music. I went to the, that music licensing website and listened, you know, kissed a lot of toads there, I gotta say.
Yeah.
But then I found that song and it's quite nice.
No, it's good.
I could play it right now. Is anybody still listening to us out there?
Yeah, there are. There's people talking about how downtown San Francisco is terrible for eating outside of business hours.
It is.
Shall we play the opening music to our podcast? This will be a world premiere.
So this is license free, right? Here's the problem.
Yeah, it's license free.
Here's the problem, founder of Rhapsody.
Oh, no, it's royalty free. Yeah.
Even though it's royalty free, if someone on YouTube has used it and entered their entire video into Content ID, I will still potentially have my video taken down. And then I have to dispute it to say, no, this is royalty free music. It is okay for us to play this.
This stuff that we're on right now still goes up onto YouTube, so this is not.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm curious. I say that.
Do you
want to
do
say,
this as an experiment?
I'm curious to see if that will happen.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm ready to hit play, but I certainly don't want to be a lousy guest.
All right,
on your podcast.
Go for it.
You tell
go for
me.
It. I've thought it over. And yes, let's do it.
All right. Can you hear it?
No. Darn it.
Just hit play. So, I guess it's because I naively thought that it would play. Would go. Over.
Yeah. Darn it. It won't work.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I know how to do this.
Okay.
Let's try this now.
To the After On podcast. I'm Rob.
That's not, that come through?
Yeah. Yeah. That came through.
All right. So we're going to try this again.
Here we go.
Welcome to the After On podcast. I'm Rob Reed.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is a special episode designed around the book, After On. Each of these special episodes focuses on one aspect of the science, tech, and social issues explored in the novel. Now, you don't have to read After On in order to learn from or enjoy these podcasts. That's because we wait until the very end to discuss the book in detail and to really tie it to this week's topic. That last section will make perfect sense if you're reading the novel. But if you're not reading it, just tune out at that point. You can always come back if you decide to read it later. And we'll warn you before we get to that part. But first, we have a lot of things to talk about, which should be interesting to everybody. Specifically, this week, we're talking about...
So there we go.
Yeah, that's so smooth. You'd never know that I recorded that in 15 different locations across several days. It wasn't quite that much.
That is our debut. Now we'll see if your video survives the censors on YouTube.
Yeah. Because you held up your mic to it, it's more likely to make it past, I think.
Now, does that mean that I'll never be able to put a video? This is going to be an audio-only podcast. So it's not a big deal. But does that mean that I will never be able to put like a video version?
No, you can. You can totally put it on and you can keep it up. You just have to be ready to deal with doing the counter notice if it happens to run into
something. Got it. And how agonizing of a process is that?
It's nothing an ibuprofen can't fix. It's merely annoying more than agonizing.
Got it. Well, cool. I am not off to Itza.
I'm sorry to hear that. I am not off to Itza either, but we are going to go off the air.
Yes, indeed.
So thank you everybody for watching. Say goodbye to the nice people, everyone.
Goodbye.
We heard you.
We heard you that time. And the secret that we'll tell our patrons before I stop the patron recording is that Roger wasn't here at all this entire time.
No.
No, actually, now there's only one Roger and all the problems are solved.
Well, that's what happens. As every sci-fi show, novel, and fiction is ever sci-fi fiction. Story is ever told. Two of you is never better than one.
So, Rob, do you have any last words of wisdom for our patrons?
For the patrons, just keep buying DTNS. It's the best investment you will ever make in new media.
Aw, thank you. That's very nice. Somebody actually said that they support two major newspapers and me. And I was like, wow. Oh. That's very kind.
Oh,
that's very kind.
Thanks, everybody.